Welcome to Trapping Across America, where fur brothers meet every week. But we're still allowed to be men, and we're proud to be from the land of the fur and the home of the brave. This is Clint Locklear. We're trapping across America. I'm not coming from the PCG compound today. I'm actually coming from the Tennessee River. I'm taking a lunch break here, and I figure this is about as good a time as any to have a trapping show is while you're actually out trapping. Make my lunch a little bit longer, but I think that's okay, because when you're getting your hands wet and muddy and everything like that, you just seem to be more in tune to what you're talking about. And today I'm going to be talking about snaring. We're going to start covering that. This is going to take several shows to cover a lot of different aspects of this. I'm not sure how far we'll get on different things, but we're going to do that. Before we get to that, we're going to have Beaver Trapper from Alabama. He's going to have another beginner's corner for you, doing a really good job for that, and I do appreciate that he's helping me out with that content. Before we get started with that, though, I do have an announcement. Our Texas Trapping School, which is usually at the end of February through March, we're going to do that a little bit different. We're always trying to find ways to make it better, have it more personal, and have the student have the absolute best experience that he can get. So what we're going to do this year, instead of having one mass group of students come down at one time, we're going to spread the students out over the month or so that we're down there. And that way we're only going to have two students per time when we're out on the line itself. So you'll be still running your own trap line. You're still going to be catching your three cats. You're going to be catching other stuff. You're going to be snaring coyotes. Predator control, the skinning, the fur put up, all that's going to be the same, but it's going to be a lot more personal than the way we were doing it, where we do more of a round robin type thing. So when you come down this year, you'll spend half your week with me, and then you'll spend half the week with Scott Adams. And I think we got some more property lined up so we can get off the reservations there, land by there a little bit, and get on some virgin territory for you. But that's going to be the big difference. Instead of having a whole group of students there, it's just going to be two. So it's going to be more like personal instruction on an actual control line while we're down in Texas. And if you don't know what that is, that's a week-long school we put on. We put you up. We feed you. We're going to go into a whole lot of education, entertainment, have fun. If you're into calling, want to do some hog hunting, you're allowed to bring that stuff with you. And when you're done with your lessons for the day, if you want to go out predator calling at night, knock yourself out. If you want to take a little bit out of the day, a couple of days, and try to shoot you a hog, go for it. This is a big boy school we're putting on, so we're going to allow the student, especially since it's going to be dropped down to two, we can customize this a whole lot more for just one or two guys than we can a group. And I think it's going to be a lot better off, and I think it's going to be a lot more advantageous towards the student. So let's go and get started with Beginner Corner, and then we're going to jump right into snaring.
Welcome to Beginner's Corner on Trapping Across America. I'm Beaver Trapper in Birmingham, and this segment of the show is dedicated to those fellas just starting out, or better yet, those fellas wanting to get started but don't know where to start. Hello, and welcome to another edition of Beginner's Corner. Tonight we're going to talk about basic coon trapping. I think trapping coons is one of the best ways for somebody to get started in trapping. Coons are available all over the United States. They're fairly easy to catch. The equipment to catch them is not expensive. And there are a lot of different ways you can catch coons. So basically, the first thing I want to talk about is you need to start in the off season. You need to start scouting for coons and coon locations. Now, a good location is going to vary depending upon what part of the country you're in. If you're in a part of the country that has a lot of cornfields are a natural magnet for coons. That's where your coons are going to be. If you're in a part of the country like I am that has a lot of creeks, a lot of rivers, a lot of water, that's where you're going to want to look. Coons work the banks of creeks. They usually work right along the water line, and usually they'll have a trail up on the high bank as well. Coons are easy to find. They leave a lot of sign. Their tracks are everywhere, so they're fairly easy to locate. Another tip is once you've located coon sets, it never hurts to pre-bait them before the season opens, if that's legal in your area. You can scatter corn. Some places you can go ahead and put sets in without the trap and go ahead and start baiting them up and that sort of thing. Anything you can do to get a jump on it so that when the season opens you have a higher possibility of catching coons is a good thing. So basically you need to be looking in the off season for where you're going to be catching coons, where the coon sign is. You need to keep notes of these locations. That's always a good thing. The next thing you need to do is you need to figure out what equipment you're going to need in order to catch the coons. And this sort of goes back to one of my earlier talks about having a system. One of the mistakes I made early on was trying to do everything at once, trying to use body grips, leg holes, and what I ended up with was a mismatch in equipment. So if you would sort of figure out, are you going to use body grips, or are you going to use footholds, are you going to use snares if they're legal in your area, and get your equipment in order. Figure out how many spots you're going to be trapping. Figure out how many sets you're going to need. And make sure that you've got enough equipment to put all of your sets in when the time comes, so you don't waste a lot of time. So basically, once you've got your areas located, and once you've got your equipment identified and ready to go, the next step is to figure out what kind of sets you're going to make to catch the coons. There's no telling how much has been written on different coon sets and different variations of these sets, but basically there are a couple of basic sets that I'm going to talk about tonight that will more than get you started in catching coons. Probably the most ubiquitous set is the pocket set. And basically, all a pocket set is a hole punched in the side of a creek or the bank of a creek, with a trap in front of the hole, guarding the hole, and some bait stuck in the hole. And that's it. Basically, the coon comes along searching for something to eat. He sees the hole. He smells the bait. And when he goes to investigate the hole and get the bait out, he's caught. There are a lot of variations on the pocket set. You can guard a pocket set with a leg hold trap. You can guard a pocket set with a conibear. There's a lot of different ways to do it. But it's a very easy set to make. It's very reliable. It'll catch coon, it'll catch mink, sometimes other things. But the pocket set is a go-to set. It's something that I'd recommend you practice and use a lot. One of the other popular sets is called a bucket set. And basically the bucket set is very similar in concept to the pocket set, and that is, you take a plastic bucket, usually a round 5-gallon bucket, or I like to use square 4-gallon buckets. I think the square buckets, they fit a conibear better, and they don't roll like a round bucket does. But basically, what you're doing is you're cutting some notches into the side of the bucket. You're sliding a conibear trap into these notches so that it's guarding the front of the bucket. And then you're putting your bait and your lure in the bucket. The idea being the coon comes along, he wants to get to the bait, he climbs through the conibear, and he's caught. You can also guard a bucket set just as easily with a foothold if you can't use conibears in your area. You can put your bait in the bucket and then bed a foothold in the dirt in front of a bucket. The last set that I want to talk about tonight is called a pipe set. And a pipe set is nothing more than a piece of PVC pipe that's been stuck in the water or stuck in the bank, either vertically or at an angle, with a trap bedded near the base of the pipe. And the idea being, you place the bait and the lure in the PVC pipe, and this serves as an attractor. The coon comes down the creek, he sees a white PVC pipe that attracts his attention. When he comes over to the pipe, he smells the bait, the lure, and it's down inside the pipe. And when he starts to work the pipe and try and get the bait out of the pipe, he steps on the leg hold that's underneath the pipe. You can look it up on any of the forums and look it up on the internet and get a lot of pictures. It's a real simple set, and it's a very easy set to make. It's very effective. One of the things that I have learned using pipe sets is you might want to either embed your pipe very firmly in the mud or in the creek bank, or even wire it off somewhere, because when I first started out, I would stick it in the mud just far enough to keep it upright, and when the coon would get caught, he would tear the pipe down and it would fall in the water, and away it would wash down the creek and I would lose my pipe. So anyway, that's something to think about. The last thing I want to talk about tonight is coon lures. There's been volumes written on the internet about coon lures, and there are a lot of different opinions. People have a lot of different opinions on coon lures. A good traditional fallback is any type of fish. That's always going to be a good bait for coons. Whether it's jack mackerel in the can, whether it's fish heads that you've saved from catching fish, bluegills in the off season, what have you, whether it's sardines that you bought at the store, you have fish bait is hard to beat. The other types of lures and baits are basically sweet lures, sweet baits. And this can be anything like peanut butter, marshmallows, concoctions of peanut butter and marshmallows mixed with molasses, things like that. In other words, it's basically a sweet bait. And depending upon where you're at and what season it is, fruit-based lures do well. Around here in Alabama, persimmon trees are great places to catch coons. They love persimmons. So anyway, that's basically what you need to know to get started coon trapping. You need to start in the off season. You need to identify your locations. You need to make some notes about where they are, how many sets you're going to need. You need to make sure that you've selected what type of traps you're going to use. Make sure you know how many traps you're going to need to set the places that you've already identified. And then you need to figure out what kind of sets you're going to make. Are you going to use buckets? Are you going to use pipes, pocket sets, some combinations of those? You need to practice making them and make sure that you have the concept down and that you can do it when the time comes. And then you need to make sure that you have the proper type of lure or bait that you can use, and you can start experimenting with that. So anyway, I hope this has been of help, and we'll see you next time on Beginner's Corner.
The answer is up there, Nina. It's looking for you, and it will find you if you want it to.
Right, let's talk a little bit about snaring now. This is a large topic that we'll be talking about off and on many of the shows, I'm sure, just for the simple fact it can go in so many directions. It can be very simple. I'm going to make some fun of a few techniques people use, mostly because I'm friends with them and I can get away with that, and they kind of expect it. But the other thing is looking at the basic design that you're going to get in the snare. Because let me tell you, I've tried all kinds of snares. And most of the time, when people get into snaring, either one, they find somebody that they're trying to replicate, or two, they just want call up a supply dealer somewhere and go, give me a coyote snare, give me a beaver snare, give me a coon snare, whatever it is. The problem with that is, though, snares are not just snares. Snares can be a lot different in how they function, how they handle certain weather, how animals can get farther in the snares or not. Will they handle more of the weather that can be thrown on them? So, you know, and there's, you know, just face it, guys, there's cheap snares, there's junk snares, and there's high quality snares, and there's everything in between. And what is the right snare for you? Well, that depends on what you're wanting it to do. And just catching an animal is not it. You know, how do you want it to perform? I mean, if it didn't really matter, we'd all still be using what we read about in some of the Ray Thompson books, where they were using cordage before they went to the stainless steel snare, and would be probably using the same lock. There's a reason most fur trappers don't use that system anymore, even the Thompsons, is because it's outdated, it's slow. The way the lock and everything's made is, it doesn't flow right. You got to sit there and piddle with it, but it will catch some animals. So it technically, because it is a snare, it will snare an animal. That's not being mean or anything against it. Time has just moved on from the very beginning, and wherever you want to be in that equation, you just need to know what you're looking for. Now before I get started too much on the actual snare, let's talk a little bit about the cable. This is of course my opinion. I'm not saying anybody that disagrees with me is wrong. I don't quite understand where they're coming from, because I went both directions. The two most common type of snare cables that we can find today are 1x19 galvanized or 7x7 galvanized. 7x7 is a whole lot easier to find outside of the trapping industry, so it was easier for that to be implemented into the trapping industry when people started selling snares. The 1x19 is a totally different type of cable. Now the 7x7, if you don't know what that means, it's basically, if you just go get a generic snare somewhere, that's what you're going to get. It's not extremely rigid. It doesn't bend up as nice to hold a load for you, which we'll talk about. And it used to be a little bit cheaper, but every now and then you can find it pretty much the same price. So the price is really not the difference anymore. But because that's what people got into using, they kind of fell in love with it because they actually caught animals with it. And then it's just human nature to go, well, that's what you need. But then about in the 80s, 1x19 started coming on the market. Now 1x19 is a lot stiffer cable. To me, it's a lot better racehorse than the 7x7 is. If you have a 1/16th 1x19 snare, you've got the same breaking strength as a 5/64th 7x7. And if you're running a 5/64th 1x19, you've got the same as a 3/32nd 7x7. It is a harder cable. The metal is actually, I'm sure it's tempered different. I really don't know how they make the difference between the two. The strand design is different, but it's smoother. It's harder because the way it's tempered, which gives you an advantage on the speed of the snare in holding a really good loop. But more importantly to me, besides those are more cosmetic. 7x7 has a tendency, when an animal fights it, what I've noticed over time is 7x7, when the animal starts really fighting that snare and gets the snare in a bad position or starts kinking it, the 7x7, because it is softer in the way it's designed, it starts spreading out. It doesn't hold the same cable size. Now all those little 7x7 strands that are in that snare, as they get unlaminated, where they're not touching each other and having the power of like laminated wood over just a single piece of wood, when it loses that strength, they start to break. And the more it breaks, the more it opens up. And then before you know it, you've got an animal that's running around with your name on it. And that's something no trapper wants, because it's just a plain waste of time. Now, is that going to happen every time? Absolutely not. There has been hundreds of thousands of animals snared and held, and everything worked just fine with a 7x7. But if you're going to get into snaring, or you're into snaring, or you do a whole lot of snaring and never really put any thought into it, what you'll start noticing is a pattern of this. If you get some entanglement, it starts rolling and your swivel quits working, that 7x7 is going to spread out on you, and you can start having trouble with it. Now, opposite of that is the 1x19. Even when it starts kinking and twisting, It holds its original lamination where it stays together more. Yes, it'll get kinked up and stuff, but it won't start spreading out into this bird nest where you lose the value of having all those different strands together at one time. And what I've noticed, especially on the coyotes and the beaver, that made a huge difference. Now the 7x7, because it is softer, if you're coyote trapping, a coyote can get his teeth and they're gonna bite the snare. Because that's what they do. They're predators. They're going to bite. They're going to try to outpower, outsmart, or outroll, or just outmuscle whatever it is you put on them. As they start biting that thing, you have the same problem with a 7x7 as you do if it's an animal that's just twisting. When a coyote can actually get that in his teeth, he starts spreading that cable out because it's softer pretty quick. And then as that happens and he's fighting the snare, now you've got these smaller strands of cable trying to hold the coyote by themselves instead of having the power of that lamination. Now that lamination holds together more in the 1x19 because it's stiffer, and the way that it's wound, if a coyote starts biting on it, he's probably going to break his teeth. It's just that hard. So you don't have the chewing issues with a coyote snare is when the 1x19 as you do in the 7x7. That was one of the main things I've noticed. We do a lot of fence snaring in the predator control business. If you're running the 7x7, or I see these ranchers down there, they go to the local co-op and they buy their snare, and it's the cheapest thing you can get your hands on is what they sell in those stores. And they have tremendous amount of chew outs and pull outs, breaks, all kind of stuff. Then we come in behind them with a 1x19 564th, and they're absolutely flabbergasted at how many coyotes we catch in those snares. So there is a huge difference there. Now cosmetically and more performance based, the 1x19 holds a more rounded loop. The 7x7 holds a teardrop loop. Sorry about that noise, but I think there's a train coming across the river. And when it holds that teardrop, there's nothing wrong with that, but you get a lot more potential for hip catches. When you have a 1x19 snare and it's rounded, you can control the trail a whole lot better because you can kind of almost have a head catch or nothing. Where the 7x7, you get a lot of hip catches and things like that. And if you're selling the fur, if you get them right behind the neck and you're in entanglement, they're going to be taken care of really quick and you don't get the fur damage. So the 7x7, to me, that's another mark against that cable. The 1x19, on the other hand, because it is stiffer, you can roll this perfect loop in loading. And if I'm gonna get a video up on Wolfer Nation showing how to load a snare from start to finish and then how to load a 1x19 snare if you buy them and they're not loaded, because a lot of companies don't load them. Newt Sterling is one, and if you want it light or heavy, or tell him what you want, Newt will build them the way that you want them. But I don't know of too many other commercial snaremen that sell snares that actually load the snare, so you'll need to learn how to do that. But basically what you're doing with that is on the if you think of a snare, you've got the loop that's going through the top of your lock, and you're going to follow that loop around, then it's going to come back up to the lock and you're going to have a stop. Usually about one third of that snare cable on a loaded snare, you're going to bend with your thumb, or you're going to bend it on a screwdriver or something on a vise, and you're going to bend it in more than it is naturally with its memory. And what that memory does, it acts like a trigger, something that's got a lot of inertia. It's sitting there like a little bulldog just waiting to attack something. So when something bumps that snare, when you get a cat or something that just, you know, he barely touches its chest, it literally closes. Now with a 7x7 in the teardrop shape, you've got to get a lot more movement in that snare. You got to get the animal to go further into it before the lock's going to start moving. And there's a lot of swing out and stuff on the 7x7 that you don't have by the 1x19. So that's a performance-based thing there. It's faster, the 1x19 is. It's stronger. It lets you control your loops better. And it doesn't come apart as easy. So to me, as you can probably tell, I'm a 1x19 fan. And that's what I will use on everything from, even if I go all the way down to a mink snare or a red fox snare that's 3/64, which is basically mink cable, all the way up to, you know, trying to do hogs under fences and stuff when I know I'm going to be doing it, I'm going to have 3/32 swim by 19. I want all of those advantages, and I believe we all should too. We should want these advantages in our snares. Now, saying that, 7x7 will catch stuff. If that's what you got, don't go throw them away and go buy something else. Use them up, for goodness sake. But if you're wanting all these advantages in your snare, to me personally, I'd go with a 1x19. Now, we're going to, a little bit about the locks. To me, it's kind of dependent on what you do. I've got friends down in Louisiana that use Cowcats' Relax-A-Lock. They're doing live market. They don't want it to close up tight. But even no matter what kind of lock you've got, if the animal reaches entanglement, there's a chance that the cable is going to get tight anyway as he twists and fights the snare. So that's not a guaranteed by any stretch of the imagination. Now, from that Relax-A-Lock that Kyle sells all the way up to a cleated cam lock and everything in between, they all flow a little bit different. Some are a little faster than the others. Some work better on 1x19. Some work better on 7x7. The three locks that I've used more of than anything else is the, I used to be a big cam lock type guy. I'd run choke springs on my coyotes. I'd take the time and I'd cleat them. Just the way O'Gorman talks about in his snaring videos is where I got that information from. And then I started going to the slim locks. And the reason I did, because of where I live in the South, and a lot of places that I trap, it's real humid. And stuff just rusts. And having that rivet going through the cam lock the way it does, I've had some really bad experiences where the one that it reminds me the most is when I was doing some control work for beaver down in Louisiana. I was doing bounty system for a parish down there. A little bit of this sloppy, silty delta type water, and with all that humidity, I was having a lot of beaver snares that weren't catching. And they'd be somewhat closed down, somewhat pushed out of the way, and I just wasn't used to seeing it. And I got playing with the snares, and the corrosion and all the silt that's in that water was getting on the cam lock, on the rivet part right there, and wasn't allowing the lock to flow right. Therefore, it wasn't catching right. So even though I caught so many coyotes and stuff with the cam locks, I started looking for a different method. And about that time, I started running around with Newt, doing some trapping with him, and he was using the slim lock, Canadian made lock, and I started using it. You can find pictures of it. Well, it's more of a flat lock. It's a low profile lock from the side. It's got a tab that comes off the back, and it locks up really tight. There is one disadvantage to the slim lock that hopefully down the road I've got a way to fix it, but right now, the metal on the slim lock needs to be a whole lot harder. So if you catch a coyote or you catch a beaver or a coon or whatever, it's going to lock up real tight. But when you go to reuse that lock, because of the tab, the way it comes off the back, it needs to have that really sharp edge to bite into the cable, especially 1x19, because remember, it's a harder type cable. And sometimes after one or two or three catches, the slim lock turned into more of a relaxing lock. Not as bad as some of the washer locks and things, but it wasn't the killing lock that it was when I started out with. But to me, that's a really, really good lock. Here lately, I've been getting snares from the snare shop at Jeremy out there. And the reason that I'm getting them out there, I still build my coyote trail snares and stuff like that, but the fence snares I'm getting for him, his service is so good that I can pick up the phone. He's got my design and my fence snare that we use down in Texas, and I can have 25 or 50 dozen sitting on my front porch in a week. And to me, even though, yes, I can make them, and yes, I might save a little bit of money, the time of actually building 50 dozen snares, I'd much rather let him do it. But the locks he's been putting on there, which has been working out really well, are the micro locks. And they're kind of like a slim lock without the tab, and they're kind of bent in the middle a little bit. And they lock up pretty good. I mean, they're definitely not a cleated cam lock, and they're definitely not a new slim lock. But it's a very good lock. And because the price is so reasonable on there, it's been doing really good. Now, Wolf Creek has got a very similar lock to that, except they got the hole size a little bit better, and it does flow a little bit smoother than his. So basically what they did is expand on what his lock was to make it a little bit better, and I think they call that the Eliminator lock. And you've got washer locks, all these different kind of locks out there. The best thing you can do is physically have one on a snare and see if you like it. Sit there and play with it. Does it flow? Does it grab? Does it twist? Does it lock up? Is it relaxing? All these different things is what you need to know as a snareman when you pick a lock. Now, to me personally, I've tried all different kind of ways of building snares. And I've got the fence snares, which has it's got a pigtail, it's about 2 foot long, and a regular snare swivel, and then it opens up to no bigger than 9 inches, because that's about, you'll never need more than that going under a fence in Texas. And it's got the micro lock, and I've got him to put a piece of tubing on there acting for a whammy. And that's what I'm using on that. When I'm building my regular snares, and if you're looking into getting in snaring, what I'm going to tell you is going to save you a tremendous amount of money, and it's going to also save you a tremendous amount of fur damage, which will make you more money. The best way I know to build a snare, it's not the cheapest way, but in the long term, it probably is a whole lot cheaper if you actually follow through with this program. When I'm building a predator snare, we're going to talk about coyotes and cats here for a minute. All I build is the loop. So if I want to have a 14 by 14 inch, loop for a coyote that's going to be 14 inches off the ground, I've got a 14 inch circle. I have enough room on there for the stop and my tubing for a whammy. And then I've got a universal box swivel, the same kind that you're going to find on any trap that you buy. It's got 2 J hooks and a body. And the reason I do that is because if I go out somewhere, I want to have the best performing snare that I can get. So if I come across a coon trail, I can make that snare into a coon snare and still get all the advantage of this swivel I'm getting ready to tell you. If it's going to be a coyote snare, it's a coyote snare. If it needs to be a cat snare or a fox snare, I can change them out really quick. On the back side of that universal swivel, I'm running a pigtail. By that, it's just an extension that's connected to the box swivel or universal swivel with a J-hook. On my predator snares, they're all about 14 feet long. The reason I do that is because I don't want to have to sit there and take the time to pull out an extension and hook it up. Having too much cable is hardly ever a problem. Having too little cable can be a disaster. So by having the longer pigtail on my predator snares, I can reach around pretty much any location I'm at where I trap in my type of terrain, and I can find something to anchor off to, whether it be a root, a tree, a log, something. 14 feet just gives me a whole lot of options. I get frustrated personally if I've got a snare that's got a short pigtail or it's just a 4 foot snare, because it always seems like the tie off is 4.5 feet away once you make your loop, and it just aggravates the snot out of me. So I just get that out of my life, and that's the reason I went this way. But by having an extension hooked to a universal trap swivel and then having a loop, this is where a lot of good things start happening for you if you've never been in the snare. And I can tell you, it takes you twice as long to build this snare, and the first initial group that you make of them is going to cost you more money. Universal swivels for traps cost more than snare swivels, but there again, they're going to last for as long as you need to use this system. So over time, it's not really costing you any more money, but the upfront cost is. So what I'm doing is I'm building the loop of the snare, whatever size that's going to be. I already got it loaded. I've already got my plastic tubing on there for a whammy. And if someone's new to snaring and you don't know what that is, it's a way to quickly secure your support wire to that. And we'll probably have another show just on supporting snares, because that's just as big a topic. But most of my support wires are number 9 wire. I want something rigid. So I can push that in the tubing, which is around the cable right behind the lock, and then now I can move my wire around and manipulate my snare to go wherever I want it to. So that's all I'm making. I make up hundreds of these. It's got a very small loop on the end with a double ferrule. It goes, makes the loop where the lock is. That's all it is. So it's just like a mini snare, just big enough for the loop. And I make a bunch of them. I make them for coyotes and cats and fox and coons and different cable sizes and everything else. And then I also get the extensions, really, I get from the snare shop, because there again, he can make them so much faster and they're not that much more expensive, and they just show up in a box. So I get all these extensions sitting there, and I've got all these loop ends sitting there, and I connect them with a universal trap swivel, close both J hooks. Now here's where it gets fun. When you catch an animal in that, you got more snaring than you're ever going to have with a universal snare swivel. They're better than no swivel, but it is definitely not a very good swivel type snare. Now if you're catching high dollar cats, or you're catching high dollar coyotes, animals that are going to be far out that are really high dollar, and you're not doing this, it's costing you a ton of money, because as that thing, having that swivel right next to that loop, when that animal starts twisting and rolling and going around stuff, he always has that swivel just within 8, 10, 12 inches of him. So as he flops and moves, he's got swiveling. If you run your swivel out on the end of your snare, say like on a generic 5-foot snare, first time that it goes around anything, you're now swivel-less. And when that animal starts fighting, you'll find out is that, and then that cable starts kinking, there's always going to be this little, this knot of metal and mess up there next to his neck where it's made a tourniquet. That tourniquet is what gives everything so much snare damage, because every time he fights, it digs in and it can't back out. And so if it's a raccoon, you've got this mark on there that it's obvious to anybody. Same with a beaver. And if you're doing high dollar cats or high dollar coyotes, no matter how much brushing you do, once you comb it, wash it, tumble it, dry it, I don't care what you do to it, really. Once that happens to you, you're going to have a mark that's going to be obvious in that fur if you get that tourniquet effect. It's really hard for that to happen with that universal swivel. Now, when you're going out on the line, one of the reasons I really like it, like I said, I can switch out a snare from a coyote to a fox in a second, still have all the optimal advantages of having that swivel right there, by just taking my cable cutters, opening the J hook, taking that loop off, sliding the other one up, then closing the J hook back. So I've switched it out. And as you can start seeing in your head, when I make a catch, now all I've got to do is open that J hook, put a new snare end on it, and I'm back in business. I don't have all this wasted cable. I don't have all these wasted stops. I don't have to go rebuild a whole brand new snare. Those little loop ends are really quick to make once you get in the practice of it. So when I see, if I catch a coyote, for instance, I open the J hook after I cut the cable off the animal. I just reach in my it's usually a milk tote. I come back, I put the new loop end on the universal swivel, still has the extension right there. It's still tied up to the same place if it hadn't tore the ground up too much. And I close it, put it back on my support, and I'm down the road. Huge amount of time saving there. Now, after a couple of years of using this system, you'll find out whatever you are using money-wise to build a new snare every single time you catch an animal, now all you're replacing is the amount of cable and the ferrules that are just in the very loop end of the cable. And to me, that's been a huge deal. So it saves me money long term by using this system, and it saves me money by having the swivel right up next to it. Now the next best thing besides the universal swivel that's like on a trap, like I've seen on Joey, Newt's got some snares like that. I'm sitting here in the boat right now looking at a bundle of Newt's mink snares, it's in my on my leg right now, and he's using the commercial fishing barrel swivels that are just bigger. They're probably about 300 pounders or whatever, which would be a monster mink for this to break, but those have really good swiveling. The downside of that is whatever I catch with these snares from Newt, I've got to replace the whole snare. If it had a system on there like the universal swivel, which would be way too big for a mink, of course, I could just open it up and put a new loop on there. So I hope you're starting to see why I think that is so such a big advantage, is that, and that's the way that I'm building these, most of my snares nowadays. But I've tried them all, and like I said, they all do work. Let's talk a little bit about the treatment of a snare. You can run them the way they are. I think you'll have a little more refusals that way because they're shiny and they stand out in nature. But you will catch animals. There will be animals that will be caught. The question is, how many are you missing? And that's usually not an answer I like on something that I know about, because I'm starting to think I'm missing a whole lot of them. The next option a lot of people do, Scott up in Ohio, he just boils them or hangs them out and lets them oxidize on their own. If I remember what he does right, he's just got a shed and it's got an overhang, and he puts a bunch of snares out there for his raccoons, and they turn a dull gray over the summer. And they hide pretty decent. The other option for that, if you're trying to do it in a hurry, the way it seems like I'm always in, if you take like an old crock pot, or not a crock pot, but like an old cannon size pot that you could put some, 4 or 6 quart mason jars in with some water over it. You can put a lot of snares in that and get you one of the small boxes of baking powder, or baking soda, excuse me, not baking powder. Put it in there, bring it to a boil, let it boil for about 15, 20 minutes. Turn the heat off, take your snares out, rinse them off, and just a day or so, they're going to be dull. What you're doing is eating off the galvanized part of the cable that makes it so shiny. There's two thoughts on that. One, yes, it's quick. Taking the galvanized off is if you're going to build a bunch of snares, I don't know if I'd recommend that unless you know you're going to be catching that many animals. Because I do believe when you take that galvanized off and you put that more raw of a metal out in the wilderness or in the woods, it has a tendency where it'll start rusting. Now, the interesting thing about cable, it seems to rust from the inside out. It seems to dry out pretty good on the outside, but there'll be just enough moisture in there that it'll start it to rust. Now, over a couple of years, it didn't make any difference. At least not to me, it hadn't. But I've got cable that I have, or snares that I've boiled, that I found 5 or 6 years later, and I can take them in my hands and work them back and forth 10 or 15 times and they'll break. So if you're going to be building a bunch of them and not using them, I don't know if I'd boil them in the baking soda. Now, what most people do that do a whole lot of snaring that I know of anyway is you spray paint the snare. The first thing you do is boil it or hang them to get the shininess off, because no matter what you're going to do, if you try to paint the snare and you leave it real shiny, the paint's just going to fall off. First time you move the lock back and forth, it's going to fall off on you. So you don't want to do that. So you've got to get that shiny finish off by boiling it. Now, the boiling part of that's going to get the dullness for you. It's going to allow your paint to sit on your cable a little bit better, and then you can paint it. The best color I found anywhere I've ever been, and I don't really snare that much in snow, so if you do, keep that into consideration, is the olive OD green paint that's the Krylon that I can get at Walmart. When I find it on sale, I'll buy 5 or 6 cases of it. I know if I just have one color, that's what I want to use. If you're in woods, it blends in. If you're in grass, it blends in. If you're in fields, meadows, it blends in. If it's next to the water, even though it's just hardwood leaves on the ground, it blends in. They're really hard to see. That gives me confidence. And that confidence is one of those things I think really helps you as a trapper. But to having that color where it blends into the environment, I think helps you a lot. Now, I used to get really fanatical about this, and I would spray paint them OD green, then I'd go back over them with another camouflage color of tan, then I'd go back over that, and just spots now, not the whole thing, but just spots with some brown, and it would be almost a tiger striped type snare. I do believe that was some of the best percentages of catches that I've got off of snares until the last thing I started doing to them, because it broke up that circle. You're not just looking at a circle of a solid color. Animals are going to notice something about that. Before we go into what I'm using next or what I do now, if you're new to snaring and you think that an animal's not going to see your snare, you're fooling yourself. If you've always read and seen demos where guys say they think it's just divine and they go through there, that is absolutely baloney. On the Teachers of the Night with the beaver, we've got a beaver, which is one of the easiest animals to snare there is. Comes up on a slide in front of the snare, and I'm going to walk you through what happened with that beaver. So when you think some of this stuff I'm getting ready to talk about is over the top, I just want you to keep this little story in mind, because you can see this on the Teachers of the Night beaver video. We've got a slide coming up to some caster mound set. The beaver comes up, not thinking of anything. When he gets within about 6 inches of that snare, he absolutely stops. The next thing that beaver does is slowly goes up to the snare. He runs his nose all the way around the loop of that snare from where he started to where he finished. And then he sits there and he gets his little feet going back and forth trying to decide if he can get around whatever this obstacle is that's in front of him, because he knows it's not natural. It's blocked off well. Beaver's brain, I don't think it can process too much information. So what's a beaver do? He slowly goes through this snare. Now you're gonna think, if until you see something like this, that an animal just walks through the snare. The beaver, as soon as it felt that cable on his sides, it's completely stopped its forward momentum. It tried to back out of the snare. The guard hairs of the beaver, because it's going the opposite direction, and he was trying to now back out of this, which he didn't know what it was, and he sure as hell knew it wasn't a vine. That's what closed the lock and caught the beaver. And then the explosion happened. But keep that in mind. A beaver, the easiest animal is that we have to snare, recognized the snare, stopped in front of the snare, smelled the entire snare. When it couldn't figure out a way around it, slowly tried to weave its way through the snare. As soon as he felt the lock move a little bit, it tries to back out of the snare. So when you're making these sets, you need to have all that kind of in the back of your brain, where the little mental image of, okay, this is probably what's going to happen, so I need to make sure I've got everything in the right place for this to work. So if you, like I said, if you think that they don't know what they, well, they don't know what they are, but I do believe they know they're there, so you need to be aware of that. What I'm doing now, after saying that story, is I paint my snares and I dip them in Full Metal Jacket. Now you can paint a snare without boiling it and dip it in Full Metal Jacket, and it'll retain its color very well. Now, this is not a promotion of Full Metal Jacket per se. This is not a plug for me for Full Metal Jacket. If anybody out there thinks that I make a dime off you buying a gallon of Full Metal Jacket, you're mistaken. F&T out of Alpena, Michigan bought that for me a few years back outright. So if they sell 20 tractor trailer loads of that next year at the NTA, I don't get any money off of it. I'm not telling you this story because there's money somewhere in this to me. I'm just going to tell you a story that kind of changed my snaring and made a huge difference to me. But I'm painting the snares. I'm dipping them in the Full Metal Jacket, which is a cold dip that you don't add gas or water to, and it's clear. Put the snares in there, and I was just more or less testing it out. Well, I've got a dog, and a lot of y'all have seen her in my video. It's Daisy. And she's been around snares. She's going on 12 years old now. But she's been around snares since she's been about 6 months old. And the first month that I had her, she got snared a lot. She learned very quickly not to get snared. Now, I'll challenge anybody out there. If you think you snare my dog, see how much money you want to put down. You can't snare. Until I started using Full Metal Jacket. The Full Metal Jacket, when I put it out there and I put it out in front of her, I never ever, for years, had to worry about catching her. She'd go up to the snare. She'd recognize the snare. She was always looking for them. She would just zip around them, which makes you kind of wonder how many coyotes are doing the same thing. At least it does me. Because once she figured it out, she never got caught again. After I dipped those traps in Full Metal Jacket, and a Full Metal Jacket is like a plastic coating. And what it does is it seals off the metal. So you're not having the metal smell come through there, which I didn't think personally on a snare was that big a deal. Well, I've got some high grass fields and trails going through this place me and Daisy were at. And then I turn her loose and I don't pay no attention. And I'm watching her from a distance and I see her go up to one where the first snare was at. I'm not thinking anything about it. I watched, she recognized the snare. She knew that loop was in front of her. She could see it, apparently. She smelled it just like the beaver. After she smelled it, she walked through it and got caught. And that was about 8 years of her never being caught in a snare and being around thousands of them a year. Now let that kind of sink in a little bit. The dog never got snared for 8 years, been around thousands of them. When she couldn't smell it, she walked right in it. Well, you just heard one of the Tennessee trains there. And steel necktie, I think one of your buddies just tried to flip the boat or the waves off his barge. But anyway, back to the snaring. The Full Metal Jacket, my dog all these years has been physically smelling the snare. I thought she was seeing the snare, but she was smelling the snare. When I put that smell inside the dip and it wasn't coming out, she couldn't put two and two together. Even though her eyes were telling her one thing, she was trained apparently off the smell, which I didn't know that made a difference, like I said, and she started getting caught. Now, if I'm going to go out snaring, I've got to leave the dog at home. Because if I don't, I'm going to be turning loose my unsnareable dog until she figures that out too. And I'm sure she eventually would, but she's getting old. And I hate to just see her looking at me like that. So if I'm snaring, she's got to stay home. But that's what I'm doing now. I'm painting, and then I'm dipping in Full Metal Jacket. And I'm not boiling the snares because I really don't have to. That Full Metal Jacket seems to be thin enough, and you know it's a thin dip, guys. If you've ever played with it, you just coil a bunch of them up, or one at a time, and dip them at cold. That's all you got to do. There's not the big globs of mess. You got to run your fingers back and forth through. It's not sticky. It hardens up really hard, kind of like plastic, because that's what it is. And then you go out and you use it once it's painted. And that's the way I'm treating these now, because a lot of guys, especially on our forums on Wolfer Nation, this comes up about every month. Someone gets a bunch of snares, and then they try to figure out what they need to do with it. And that's my experience with them anyway. You can run them bright. You can boil them. You can paint them. Formula One from Newt, I've used those snares. They work really well in his Formula One. The trick about his Formula One, when you dip them, you need to run your fingers down that cable to make sure there's no globs or anything. And then once it dries, it's pretty fast, and it's a great camouflage color. But that's the way that I'm dipping them. Well, because of time, I don't think we're going to get into actual snaring any animals. So let's talk a little bit about supports. Now, the way that a lot of guys back in the day used to support their snares, and a lot of guys today, and I kind of kid around Newt with this a whole lot, and I call it caveman snaring. And I see the advantages of it sometimes in certain terrain, But there's a lot of places where that disc flat doesn't work very well. And it's, you take a 14 gauge wire, which it's a little bit heavier than the baling wire like you can get at Tractor Supply or Home Depot or somewhere. And you put it on a roll on the side of your belt, and then when you're gonna put your snares out, you unroll a certain amount of it and you tie it around a tree or a bush, or you stick a stick in the ground, and you come off of that and you get it real tight, and you make a W, which is what I've always done. Newt does a inverted S, and I'm sure we'll get him on here to talk about it, and we'll jab each other a little bit about it. And then you run your snare through that, and that's your snare support. That's what holds your snare in place. Now, one of the major rules about snaring, and what gets a lot of guys frustrated with snaring, if your support is not rigid, you're gonna have problems. If the animal can start playing, going through that snare and the whole snare's moving, you're gonna have a lot of bad catches or where they're gonna back out of the snare. You need to think of a snare kind of like you would a gun. When you put a gun on a bench rest, you do that so when you're looking down the sights of the scope, the only thing that's gonna move on the whole platform of the gun is gonna be the trigger. So when that fires, the barrel's not moving up or down, left or right, or anything like that. The same thing you need to think of your snares. However you're going to support them, whether you use the caveman method or some of the more modern supports we're going to talk about, no matter what kind you use, you need to make sure that it's rigid. So if you're using 14 gauge wire, you've got to have that pretty close to whatever it is that you're going to be wiring that off to. You know, I wouldn't try to run a piece of 14 gauge wire out a foot and a half and try to support a snare. You're asking for a train wreck there. Don't do it. If you've got to, and that's a method you're going to use, you need to double or triple the wire up to get you some rigidity, or have a little bit of 11 gauge or something there that can give you that rigidity, because it's a stiffer wire, to go out over your trail and be rigid. And the lock on your snare, guys, that's the trigger of the gun. That's the only thing that should be moving is the lock. So it's got to be rigid. Your whole platform's got to be rigid for that to work. There's, to me, that's a very slow way of snaring. If you're only setting a few, I don't think it matters. If you've been using that system and you've got it down where you're really quick at it like Newt is, knock yourself out. I'm not going to hold anybody against doing that. To me personally, it seems like where I've got the best brush or grass or the tight spot of a trail to hang a snare, it's never where the best support is to support the snare off of. The tree's too far one way off the trail, something like that. And we're like, since I'm on the river today and I'm looking at this, I can't even push in a beaver stick in this clay to support a 110 conibear. What I'm doing now is I've got 16 penny nails that I drive up into wood, little form stakes, cut the head off of it so I can push the metal of the 16 penny nail down in the clay to hold the conibear. And that's how hard this ground is I'm muskrat trapping on right now. But if I go right on the bank, it's just as hard. So and I'm looking at a beaver trail right now. I'm going to be setting up once I get off talking about snaring. If I try to go up there and push a stick into that, and I can't even get a small beaver stick in the mud down here, and I go and I just try to grab some sticks and push in the ground, every one of them's gonna break. Either that, now I've got to pull out a hammer and something to drive a pilot hole with, which is the first time it gets rain, it's gonna be wobbly again, which is breaking the rule of having a solid platform. So me personally, I don't like it. Now, I've been to a lot of places, like on the coast, where you have softer type sandy, loamy black muck, and it's real easy to do, to use that system, because you're not dealing with certain types of ground. Now, in frozen ground, you know, you're sucking pretty hard unless you've got the perfect trail with the perfect tight down spot and the perfect tree sitting right next to it to wire off to. But you can make it happen eventually, but it's the speed of setting a snare that I try to get to. So I use snare support. So if I've got a snare, I've got a snare support with me. The ones that we used to sell, and you may be able to get Nick Bowers to build you some, is if you can imagine a U-shape that's made out of a quarter-inch rod that goes up about 3 inches, goes over about 3 inches, and comes back down 3 inches, so the bottom, it's open, so it looks like a big staple. On top, on the side of that, we weld and wrap the number 9 wire. And the reason this has been what we're using now is because I haven't found anything that's even close to this as far as speed, recoverability, and you can put it damn near anywhere, is that system right there. So you've got this upside down quarter inch rod or 5/16, whatever you have, and the number 9 wire welded and wrapped around that. So I can go up and either tap it with a hammer, step on it, or push it in with my hand. Most time when I'm raccoon trapping, it's early season, I just push them in with my hand if I'm snaring them. Now, because I've got 2 points contacting that ground, it's never going to swivel because it can't. It's not going to rock back and forth because it can't. And it's rigid right there. And because it's 2 points of interest, if one of them hits something solid, you can still weld on that thing with a hammer, and it'll bend enough to allow it to go in normally enough, even in a real gravelly type ground, you'll have a good support. And then all I've got to do with my plastic tubing is slide that on that wire, put it in the trail, and adjust it the way I want to. I've already hooked it off to a tree or a root or something. I'm good to go. I'm not going and trying to find sticks to push in the ground. I'm not, because I can tell you, if you're trying to use the stick method and you push in the ground all the time, either one, you're going to have more rock than you realize. Ground's going to be harder than you thought it was, or it's going to be half frozen, or every stick you grab is going to be half rotten. At least that's my experience, and that's the reason I don't like it. But with a metal snare support, even though I've got to physically take it with me, the extra dragging it around and carrying it to me is a way to go. Now, if I'm in a place that's got decent ground, because what I'm going to tell you is going to break here, I first got this idea from Bernie Barringer in his coon book. If you've never read it, I think it's called Space Age Coon Trapping. It was written back in the fur boom. Excellent, excellent book. But he talks about this snare support, and I've used it a ton on fox, cats, and coons, and even beaver, as a matter of fact. But it's a picket stake like you're going to form up concrete with. He's using oak. I don't, because of the weight. And I'm just using the pine like I just go get a bunch of them down at the hardware store. I'm drilling a hole almost at the bottom of that, and that's where I'm running my cable through with a stop and a washer. So my anchor is actually going to be about 12 inches under the ground. And then up towards the top of that picket, I drill 2 more holes that are probably about 1.5 inches apart, and I run my snare support wire, number 9 in one, and run it back up through. So when I pound that stake in, the ground pressure holds everything really tight and true for me. It's all one integrated system, so I can grab 2 or 3 in my hands and a hammer, and I can be setting snares in the middle of an open field with no entanglement whatsoever. If you've got the ground to do that, like in Iowa before it freezes, it's a super system to use. I don't use that as much now because I use more of the metal, but if I was going somewhere just to raccoon trap or just to fox, or coon snare, just a fox snare, it probably would be my method of choice. I'd build a bunch more of them up. The other method that I use a whole lot of are kill poles. Now, kill poles is one of those things a lot of people talk about, very few people actually use. And one of the main reasons is nowadays is rebar has got crazy expensive. If you're using, for coyotes example, you really need 5/8 inch rebar. Not only is it expensive, if you've got them, it's 5 foot long, it's heavy. So if you think you're just going to take a Toyota truck and put a couple hundred of those in the back and go out and catch a bunch of coyotes, you're going to have broke springs. It is that heavy. But for coyotes and for speed, the kill pole is the way to go. If you've never seen one, you can go on our free trapping videos and you can see some of the ones we use in different videos on beaver and stuff. It's just a rod. We're going to stick with rebar right now. And it's like for coyotes, you want a 5/8 inch bar most of the time, 5 foot long, so you can run it down about 18 inches. if you're using for everything else, you can get away with a 4 foot bar, half inch, and then you can drive that in about 18 inches and you'll still be above the animal. Now the cool thing about a kill pole, if you've never seen one, but you have a snare and a kill pole, and that is your stake and your support and your anchor, everything all at one time. So you come up next to a trail, you beat in your pole right next to where the perfect place is, and then you put your snare on the top. And what it looks like on the top, and this is going to be hard to describe, at least the way that I do it with just words, but if you get online and stuff like that, you shouldn't have any trouble seeing it. If you can imagine the top end of what we're going to call the top end of the kill pole, if you were to weld some number 9 wire and then just spot weld it towards the top, like with a half inch from the top, and then take a hammer handle and stick it up next to the rod and bend that wire over it, and then pull your hammer out and spot weld it right there again, you're going to have like a half of a circle or a U sticking out with it, but it's welded on both points. It's connecting with a rod. And then you take your number 9 wire and wrap it a couple times around the pole to give it some springiness where the welds don't break. And you run off about 12, 18 inches of number 9 wire. And that's all it is a pole and that number 9 wire at the top. But you run your snare through the half a circle or the U that's up top, and you just run it back through itself. It can't go up or down because you've got the number 9 wire welded. And now you've got your snare completely anchored. And then you just open the loop to the size you want, put it on your whammy or tubing, adjust it in your trail, and you're gone. It's literally that fast, guys. But the neat part about it, and this is greatly different from using even disposables on regular stakes for a snare. If you've got your cable above the animal and he's pulling, he's always pulling your stake down. The reason that coyotes especially pump stuff is because the stake is flat with the ground. They've got a piece of cable or a chain, and then they're jerking upwards on it. So every time they jerk, the pole's trying to come up because that's what the force is telling it to do. But on a kill pole, as he pulls or goes sideways, the force is always going down and to the side, which is pushing harder into the ground. And if you use a kill pole and you've never used one before, you'll come up to them. A lot of times you'll have a coyote or a beaver or something in there, and you'll take care of the animal and cut the snare off. And if you're pulling it, you can take two fingers and just pop it up out of the ground. But the animal can't do that. And that's what makes the kill pole very unique to me, because I can take the kill pole and go out in a grass field on a good trail and set a killing snare set in the middle of nothing with no entanglement. And if I'm worried about people seeing it or I'm worried about fur damage, that's a huge, huge advantage. But that's kind of the ways that I use to support my snares now. And if you're out in the field and you've got a regular support like we talked about at the beginning made out of the upside down staple, well then you can use a disposable stake and just anchor it down. But with coyotes, if you anchor them into nothing, like a lot of y'all guys have been forced to go to the cable restraint, which I'm not even sure should be in the same sentence as a snare, you're going to have a bad problem with chewing the cable, because he's not going to get wrapped up and he's going to have all that energy to sit there. And when you anchor off to the ground, I want you to visualize this, because this is an important factor if you're thinking a kill pole is just a gadget you don't really need to deal with. If the cable is coming out of the ground and it's on a coyote's neck, as soon as he tries to figure out what's going on and he spins around, guess what's right in front of his mouth? The cable. Now, if it's on a kill pole and it's coming down from above his head and he spins around, what's he see? A 5/8 inch rebar. Now, he can take all his frustration he wants to out on that metal bar, but it's not going to help him any. You don't get the chew outs on the kill poles as you do when you're anchoring from the ground. Just something to think about there. Well, to be honest with y'all, I had all intentions to talk about snaring critters, but it seemed the more I got into it, it's almost like I needed to have a base setting of some kind to go off of so I wouldn't have to answer a whole lot of questions later. So I guess today on this show, we're going to talk about the actual snare and supporting the snare like we did. And then down the road, we will talk about different tricks, techniques, and methods to snare different animals. Coyotes, cats, fox, coons, beaver, mink, muskrats. Because trust me, if it walks, crawls, or flies, you can probably snare that thing. You can even snare a fish if you want to. And that's what makes them so versatile. And I'm sure we're going to get Newt on here and some other guys that are really experienced snaremen. I'm going to try to get LT Gray on here from Ohio because he really knows a whole lot about snaring. I haven't talked to him yet, but hopefully he agrees to it. But that's what the show was today, I guess, was snares and sports. And then down the road, we're going to talk about how you use those to put fur in the fur shed.
Behold, a pale horse. The man who sat on him was death. And hell followed with him.
Well, guys, I better get back to work here. I've got some muskrat sets to put in, and so I can have a decent catch tomorrow. But I do appreciate you spending my lunch hour with me out on the Tennessee River today, and hopefully some of the trains and airplanes and blue herons didn't disrupt things too much. If you've never went out and snared, I suggest you give it a try. If you're in a state that's got cable restraints, just go ahead and hold your nose and go learn that. If you know somebody, another trapper or family member or something like that, or a hunting trip you're going to be going out of state and they have snaring, I suggest you learn how to do this. It's a skill everybody should know. You might find out you like it a whole lot more than you think you do. There's a whole lot of less energy involved with setting a snare. And the most important part about snaring to me, what it taught me more than anything else, is I had to put the loop where the animal's going to be. Don't rely on lure. Don't rely on side appeal. You've got to learn the habits of the animal, what trails they're using, how to block them down, how to make things look natural. All that goes in hand with snaring. And the better snaremen, I believe, end up being better foothold trappers, because once you can get an animal to put his head through a loop, you're right on location to put his foot in a trap. Well, I better get busy here. I'm not going to get anything done for the rest of the day. I only got about three and a half hours left before it gets dark. But do yourself a favor. Do something today. Do something tomorrow. It's going to make yourself a better trapper. Either smarter, learn a new technique, try something out you've never tried. Go out, have a good time, stack that fur up, and just enjoy being an outdoorsman.
Move your asses!